From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, a shakeup in leadership at the New York State United Teachers Union. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on Comptroller DiNapoli opting out of public campaign financing as a test for his next election. And now that the budget is done, lawmakers switch to other priorities. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The Common Core controversy has claimed another victim, New York State United Teachers President Dick Iannuzzi, who lost his seat over the weekend. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports the vote is remarkable for many reasons.
Over the weekend, NYSUT convention goers elected Karen McGee, the 11-year head of the Harrison Teachers Union in Westchester County, to a 3-year term as president of the New York State United Teachers. She unseated Richard Iannuzzi, who served since 2005 and was just the second NYSUT president in the union's history. Observers see the vote as a tear in the status quo that existed in the way the 600,000-member teachers' union, the state education commissioner, and governor interact. Jessica Bakeman spent the weekend in Manhattan following NYSUT's 42nd annual Representative Assembly. The Capital New York education reporter points out that New York has already seen two education leaders ousted this year.
The first being the election for the State Board of Regents, which is typically an undramatic affair, and yet we saw the Albany area regent pressured to resign. It sort of begs the question, what's going to happen in November when Governor Andrew Cuomo and lawmakers are up for reelection? It seems pretty clear that the education issues are going to be at play in those contests as well, and Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino, who is running against Governor Cuomo as a Republican, he has clearly seen the opportunity with the education controversy and capitalized on it as well.
Astorino favors withdrawing entirely from Common Core standards. In a video announcing his 3 school-aged children won't be participating in new testing standards, he linked it to another political hot potato.
Common Core didn't come from parents. It didn't come from teachers or school administrators. It came from Gates and later Washington bureaucrats, the geniuses who brought us Obamacare.
Karen McGee taught elementary school and special education in Harrison for nearly 30 years.
Well, as of Sunday, teachers of the New York State United Teachers are feeling empowered. They're feeling that they have new life. They're feeling that their voice will be heard. They're feeling that they will be engaged. They're feeling that there will be innovative solutions to address the issues that are currently out there impacting their classroom and their ability to work with students.
McGee has been outspoken in her criticism of Common Core. Her election falls into place with an overall ascent of women taking more active leadership roles in New York State politics. Again, Jessica Bakeman.
Karen McGee is the first woman president of NYSUT, and at the end of the convention, she gave some remarks in which she pointed out that it was a historic election because of that, and there was a lot of applause and some people saying in the crowd, it's about time. I guess about 70% of NYSUT's membership are women. I think they are excited about the fact that they've elected a woman leader, but I don't think that by any means that's the reason they elected Karen or the reason why they chose not to continue with Richard Iannuzzi. I think what motivated the change was more a sense of unrest and a sense of dissatisfaction with the way that NYSUT leadership has handled some of the policy changes that have come down the pike with Governor Andrew Cuomo, as well as Education Commissioner John King, namely the property tax cap, teacher evaluation. Also, state aid levels are challenging for a lot of schools. There have been layoffs. So I think teachers felt like they wanted a slate of leaders that, in their opinion, would fight Governor Cuomo and John King, fight their policies more aggressively.
Dennis Tompkins is a spokesman for the Education Department.
This is just union politics as usual. Commissioner King remains focused on improving our schools to ensure every student can build the skills and knowledge needed to succeed in college and a career.
Iannuzzi, who was a regular commentator on WAMC, was heavily criticized for a $10,000 donation the union made to Cuomo's reelection campaign and for not being tough enough when it came to opposing Common Core.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week you spoke with State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli, who, after being chosen as the test case in public campaign financing for his election, coming election, he has opted out, and at the encouragement of good government groups. What's going on?
Well, we don't really know why Andrew Cuomo doesn't like Tom DiNapoli. But there's been all kinds of evidence. Now, from where I'm sitting, and what do I know? You know, DiNapoli has been a terrific controller. He works hard. He's as clean as could be. The people around him have great respect for him. He does his work. He does his audits. Maybe that's one of the problems of the governmental agencies. But Andrew Cuomo just doesn't like him. In the first election, last election, he almost cost him the election because, you know, his own gubernatorial running mate refused to endorse him. And we are told that that's not going to happen this time, but who knows? So now they take DiNapoli and they say, okay, and to some degree, DiNapoli is responsible for this, I'll be honest with you, because he always said, make me the test case for campaign finance. And so they do, but they do it in such a way that it just is a mess. They get the Board of Elections, who has trouble getting out of its own way, who's been criticized by everybody. They say, on top of everything else you can't do and you haven't been doing well, do this badly also. And that's sardonic, by the way, in case anybody misses it. And, you know, everybody knows that within their realm of competency, it's going to be very difficult for them to do it. And not only that, they say, we're only going to make you the only test case. You know, come on now, everybody. We all know what's going on. They'll take the heat off both the legislature and the governor for having to do the same thing. This is a governor who has upward, we think, of $33 million in his campaign account. That's a lot of money. And, you know, he says he's for public campaign finance. But he'd have to give up most of that money, or a good deal of it, if he engaged in a public finance campaign, as they have in New York City, where a dollar you raise gets you $6 back from the government. So the legislature didn't want it. Obviously, they got there the way they got there. And I think that includes both the Democrats and the Republicans. Even though the Democrats keep passing the bill, they've always passed the bill because they knew the Republicans would say no. So they all get out of their own way. They go after DiNapoli and they say, Tom, you're going to be the chicken in the machine here. And that's it. And of course, DiNapoli has now, because so many people see this as a way that the others have gotten out of the way of this very good idea. And DiNapoli has been encouraged by the good government groups, otherwise known as the goo-goos, to opt out and to say, I'm not going to participate in this. It's a fraud. If he doesn't use those words, he means it.
Let's talk unions. Big shakeup at the unions. Ooh. New York State United Teachers Union. Dick Iannuzzi voted out by the delegates. Karen McGee in. They also voted no confidence in State Education Commissioner John King. And picking up on your conversation with DiNapoli, you asked him about this, and he said, you know, the state workforce has been scapegoated and they're demoralized.
They have been scapegoated. We do know that there are those politicians who will go after state workers. It's just so unfair. These are the people who carry the bedpans. These are the people who do the dirty work. These are the people who just make sure that we're safe and that our bridges are safe and our roads are safe and the rest of it. But the one group that really gets me are the teachers. You know, they go after the teachers and they scapegoat them and they basically lie about them. They say, well, you know, they only have to teach from 9 to 3. I was married to a teacher for a long time who became a college professor and couldn't believe how much easier her life became. Who would get up at, you know, the crack of dawn and be at her desk at 7 and marking papers all weekend and all night and doing parent conferences and calling up people to make sure that everything was going to happen. I mean, these are the people we entrust our beloved children to take care of them. And it's just terrible when cheap tin horn politicians try to scapegoat teachers. And the teachers get angry about it. For example, they roll out the Common Core. Now, the Common Core is good stuff. I mean, you know, we want our kids to compete internationally, and we say, these are the things you should know. But if you're going to do it, you don't test them on it before you've actually taught them. And you certainly don't test them before you've trained your teachers about how to teach the stuff. So what happened in the union case is Dick Iannuzzi, who was a good man, wasn't militant enough for many of the unions. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And there was a little bit of an internal strife between the New York City union and the state union. And the New York City union leader was a guy named El Grew. He had blood in his eye. And he is the new look, I think, of militant union, the state worker unions and others, because these folks want people who go out there and really represent them and really do it in a forceful fashion.
Well, from the New York Times, U.S. attorney criticizing Cuomo's closing of panel. That's the Moreland Commission, and we're talking about Preet Bharara.
Well, I'm really glad that the U.S. attorney took notice of that. I did, too, as you may remember, David.
Yes.
I couldn't understand why you would appoint a distinguished panel made up mostly of district attorneys and other great people, and they had blood in their eye, and they were going to go, and they were going to look at all the corruption in New York State, including the legislature, and they sent out subpoenas, and you'll remember that Ken Lovett of the Daily News told us that the Cuomo people were telling the panel, the investigative panel, where not to go. Well, that's an extraordinary story. But then we see that as a trade for a couple of very dubious ethical reforms, and I mean really dubious, the panel is packed up and told to go home. Now, they had published an initial report, and in that initial report showed some promise, and they said that they were going to be looking at all kinds of stuff, and as I say, they issued all kinds of subpoenas. But before any of those things could happen, Cuomo closes up his own panel. It doesn't make sense to a lot of people. The U.S. attorney, who has been investigating corruption in New York and seems determined to get things done, has made it clear that he's not happy about this. Why would you close it down? A very good question.
Next story comes from New Jersey, Alan. Christie aides don't have to turn over bridge scandal documents, judge rules.
Well, yeah. You know, first of all, it's a New Jersey judge, so one and one makes two. But even with that said, what we know is that almost always the right not to self-incriminate, your Fifth Amendment right and everything else, means that what happens is you're going after the bigger fishes, you get the little fishes, and you get them to tell what they know. And the way you do that is you give them immunity. And if you don't give them immunity, they don't talk. And in many cases, they don't have to. That's why you see prosecutors building cases by asking people to go after the next one up on the chain and get immunity. Sometimes this really hurts. We've seen mafioso-type people who will admit on the stand having killed a lot of people. 18 people in one case getting immunity for saying it in order to get the next guy up the chain. And obviously, there is a concurrent news that we keep hearing that at least one person told Christie about what had happened with Elaine closing at this memorial service. And then you get into the usual, what did you know and when did you know it, and holding people responsible not for having been involved in the original act of closing Elaine's, but for having covered it up.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Now that the state budget is done, the focus at the Capitol shifts to some other priorities, including whether to allow medical marijuana. Advocates came to the Capitol to lobby lawmakers this week, but the bill is getting bogged down over political skirmishes. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt with more.
Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver caused a bit of a stir when he seemed to say that a bill to legalize medical marijuana might be dead for the year, saying he did not think it has a future in the 2014 session.
We're into doing things, making laws now, and I don't know what will happen.
Silver quickly walked that back. He issued a statement reminding people that Assembly Democrats had put the medical marijuana bill in their state budget proposal and that the chamber has approved the measure numerous times. Silver says if the Senate does decide to take up the bill, Assembly Democrats would be delighted to pass it once again. The Senate, which is ruled by a coalition of Republicans and a handful of breakaway Democrats, has so far not put the measure on the floor due to opposition from some GOP senators. The Senate sponsor, Diane Savino of Staten Island, is a member of the co-ruling Independent Democratic Conference. She talked about her measure earlier this year, saying it would empower the Department of Health to grant licenses to marijuana dispensers. They could provide the drug to patients who'd be prescribed marijuana to help treat a number of conditions ranging from cancer to MS to seizure disorders.
Also, it would allow for the creation of an industry that would grow and cultivate medical marijuana, which could produce thousands of jobs, hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue.
Savino maintains there are enough votes in the Senate to approve the measure if the bill comes to the floor for a vote. Savino was the subject of an article by Capital New York, which said the senator was trying to use a parliamentary maneuver to try to advance the bill and was attempting an end run around Senate Republican leader Dean Skelos. Senator Savino refused a request for comment. Her spokesman says the senator does not want politics to distract from the issue. Advocates who came to the Capitol to lobby for the bill say there are signs that Republican opposition is softening. Holly Anderson with the Breast Cancer Coalition of Rochester says several Republican senators in Western New York have recently changed their minds on the issue.
Republican senators on board for this, they've committed to helping us get this legislation passed.
That list includes GOP Senators Joe Roebuck, George Maziarz, Mark Grisanti, and Tom O'Mara. A spokesman for Senate GOP leader Dean Skelos says they are studying the measure. Governor Cuomo has proposed an alternative plan. It would permit a limited experiment dispensing medical marijuana at a few hospitals for a smaller number of illnesses. The drug would come from a federal center in Mississippi. Cuomo recently defended his plan in a conference call with reporters, saying alternatives like the legislature's bill had not really been discussed.
We don't have any agreement on any other medical marijuana bill, and frankly, there hasn't been any discussion, any serious discussion, in my opinion, of any other alternatives.
Advocate Holly Anderson says Cuomo's proposal falls far short of what's needed.
Bottom line is, it's just not enough. You're talking about a handful of patients. You're talking about a specific population of ill people. You're talking about an age range that is probably, it's not going to be across the board.
A spokesman for Cuomo says if the Senate and the Assembly pass their broader bill to legalize medical marijuana, then the governor will take a look at it. There won't be any action on the bill in the legislature for a while, though. Both houses are taking a 3-week spring break. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The number of crude oil tanker cars being hauled on trains south from Canada to the Port of Albany has increased substantially over the past year. Several environmental groups are expressing concerns over potential accidents and demanding action. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
The tanker cars are hauling the controversial Bakken oil, or fracked crude oil, on rail lines that travel along Lake Champlain and across rivers and streams of the Adirondack Park. The Adirondack Council is expressing concerns about the increased volume of rail transport and the safety of the oil tank rail cars. Deputy Director Diane Fish notes that very little oil would contaminate the waters, and the tracks are often very close to the lake and rivers.
We know that the DEC looked at the issues for Albany, but we're not really sure that they looked at the issues for the Adirondack Park should something happen. And then there's also the concern for human safety. These cars, the DOT 111 cars that are being phased out but are still being used currently, are the cars that are blamed for the terrible accident in Quebec last summer that killed 47 people. And these DOT 111 cars are now running through 12 small towns in the Adirondacks along the western shore of Lake Champlain. So we're very concerned about the potential risk to the people in those communities, too.
The route along Lake Champlain travels through Essex County. The Board of Supervisors recently invited emergency responders from across the county to meet with CP Rail officials for a safety presentation. Board of Supervisors Chair Randy Douglas says they are concerned and want to make sure emergency services are prepared.
The first step for us was to have the initial meeting with CP Rail. We asked a lot of real hardline questions, but I do think down the line it wouldn't hurt to have the DEC and the Environmental Protection Agency take a look at the oversight and make sure that us in Essex County are well prepared in case a disaster does happen.
In a notice of intent to sue the U.S. Coast Guard and the Environmental Protection Agency, the Center for Biological Diversity notes that in 1999, there was almost no crude nor refined oil transported by rail in the region. At the time, the document continues, the storage capacity for oil products in the Albany area was about 9 million barrels, but that has changed dramatically. The legal document says, quote, more than 1 billion gallons of Bakken crude oil alone passed through the Port of Albany by rail last year, with plans for further increases in the works, unquote. The center lists 17 endangered species that could be affected by a crude oil spill from a train derailment or barge or tanker accident in the Hudson River corridor. Center for Biological Diversity, Northeast Conservation Advocate and Senior Scientist Molly Madison says their suit focuses on the Hudson River area because there is a plan in place to focus on oil spills.
Unfortunately, it's outdated because it does not address this huge change that we've seen in crude oil transportation in the Hudson and throughout New York over the last couple of years. But we focused on that because that was something that was concrete that we could address. And also, it has these 17 federally protected species in that waterway and out in the bay that the plan also needs to address. That does not mean that there isn't a concern about spills elsewhere, including, of course, Lake Champlain.
Federal and state officials and the New York, New Jersey Regional Response Team, which provides technical assistance for emergencies involving hazardous substances, were scheduled to meet Wednesday and Thursday in Albany to discuss the region's plan to prevent and respond to oil spills.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1415 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.